Maybe I can just ask you one question. I think I read that you were planning a kind of early warning system to engage with perhaps policy institutes and others. How much thought has gone into that? Is that going to be a significant part of the endowment, or is it just
early warning in the format of think tank?
Yes.
Well, definitely endowment will have a limited analytical capacity, but we are now discussing this still with our board, to what extent the grant-making institution should have a role in doing analysis and any kind of early warning or commenting on democracy deficit in the regions we operate. What I think is that it's going to be really intentional side product. In a sense, we cannot avoid of passing a message from our beneficiary partners on the ground. But we will not probably at this stage design any specific tool or allocate too much funds to address this kind of task, because I don't think our Board of Governors is ready to accept this at this stage. Does not include a possibility in the later stage, because I myself see value added in doing this, but it cannot preoccupy us and divert us from the key activities, which is basically providing funding.
Thanks very much. We'll turn to Orissia. Maybe you could give us your impressions of what perhaps the potential pitfalls are for the new endowment, and your perspectives also in terms of which civil society groups really are worthy of receiving the money.
I'm not ready to entertain the audience, because I think this is a little bit out of the scope, and I don't have my crystal ball with me now to make a perfect list for Minister Pomianowski to make his job easier. But I was thinking, as Minister, you mentioned that the endowment is a kind of a hybrid between the government and NGO. I had this acronym GONGO in my mind, so I guess lots of organizations here might have thought of a double standard, which is often referred to in the region vis-à-vis Europe. But this is just as a joke and something that rings
Jokes
a bell.
Jokes
happen sometimes, yes. But if I may just quickly do a journey in a type of a SWOT analysis, because I was thinking it's good to talk about strengths of civil society, it's good to talk about weaknesses of civil society, it's good to talk about opportunities, threats, and then maybe some of the ideas specifically related to what the European Endowment for Democracy can do. I mean, briefly speaking about strengths, and I see a lot of familiar faces and people around the table, and this is the strength of civil society. These are the people who are committed to free and open society. These are the people who have linkages throughout the global society, knowing each other from different countries. This is one of the strengths that we should never forget. They are also excellent experts on the topics that they're covering, be it human rights, environment, culture, education. There has been an enormous expertise that is centered in the civil society, independent from the state, in all these countries, that was born thanks to a lot of European and American and independent assistance that was given to create and establish these NGOs. They're excellent project managers. Organizations who know how to manage and run professionally non-profit projects, report well to their donors. And there's a certain entitlement in the societies at this stage that there should be civil society, which didn't exist 20 years ago. So I think these are some of the pillars that we already have in the region that we stand on. Now if I go back to weaknesses, and this is something I have been describing a lot in my paper, How to Finish Revolution, Civil Society in Ukraine, Georgia and Moldova, I was talking a lot about the phenomenon called NGOcracy, where a lot of societies remained outside of democracy assistance, and they are not part of civil society as we would see it. You would have 5% any NGO members in Ukraine. You would have only 13% in such a big country as Ukraine that know any NGO. So what happens is basically there's a gap and disconnect between professional managers and NGOs who are trying to assist these citizens and groups of people, whether they are formal or informal, citizens, wider audience. We also have a poor transparency. I think that this is something that causes a lot of conspiracy theories about civil society in the region, who's funding, who's really behind, whose interests they are really promoting. Foreign agents don't want to mention all that around the table. But this is part of the media landscape because of poor transparency of a lot of groups who are working in the region. There's low sustainability. If you look at the questionnaires among the NGO managers, if they would ask, if you stop funding from abroad, what will happen with your group? More than in some countries, 80% would say, I will have to close down because I will have no money to operate in the country. And this is after 20 years of assistance. It's a weakness, I think, of civil society. And finally, I think one of the big weaknesses is that there is lack of theory of change. There's a lot of project-based work that is being done, and it's good work, but it doesn't fit in the bigger picture. When you talk to people, how do you see democratic change happening in your country, if you can describe from the needs to the result? And I think this is part of the weakness, is that these groups who are operating outside of the market forces and outside of the power of state, they are a parallel society, so to say, that is operating according to its own rules and is lacking the macro theory of change. Finally, if I would like to mention some of the opportunities that are still there in the region for such donors as European Endowment for Democracy. And these opportunities are that people already, I think, are more receptive to internalizing democratic values. And here's the question of the panel, what NGOs can do to promote democratic culture in these countries? And this is a very important question that we should all think. What are the opportunities that we have? Because without the wider citizen support and without accepting democratic rules of the games in wider society, we will not achieve any change. And it's not so easy to find these groups of local demand for change. But they do exist. If you look at some of the neighborhood associations, if you look at some of the parent committees, these are the people who are trying to set up new rules of the games. And finding these people and bridging the citizens who are informally organized and the citizens who have experience in civil society would mean that this will help to institutionalize some of these practices that people are already trying to implement in their daily lives. I think it's very important, and it's a great opportunity, that at large civil society has a positive image as the force of good. You know, mostly people, if you ask about them, about общественные деятели, громадские деятели, they think it's something good. And this good has to be built into membership, because I think that without real membership, there will not be accountability to citizens. And we all know, by law, we all have to be membership organizations, but how many of us have real members with any kind of a collective decision body that elects the director and is accountable to its constituency? And in a sense, because of lack of this membership, there is an imbalance in the law where there is no demand-driven work. You know, you don't have any people to express voice on what you are doing. You are yourself deciding, and maybe you're only accountable to people who are providing funding. So in the sense, you should see membership as a check and balance in the work that you're doing. And I know there are a lot of think tanks here at the table, and a lot of maybe thinking, well, how does membership even, you know, relative to what I am doing? But I think there are ways around creating your constituency of people who, when tomorrow your organization will be closed for whatever reason, lack of funding, governmental oppression, there will be somebody in your society upset about it. And I always think this is a good question to ask yourself as a leader of an organization. Who will be upset if my organization is closed down tomorrow? So now coming back to a few ideas, if I may, to propose to the European Endowment for Democracy, if I were to think about some of the programmatic areas or steps to take. I think one of the main one of the main mantra of the European Endowment for Democracy should be to mobilize change-minded citizens. I think there are a lot of people individually unhappy, atomized, but already feel that they demand change. And if these projects will be able to galvanize people who are like-minded and who want to set up new rules of the game, I think this endowment would already do a great good to the European continent. I think that people should understand their power by seeing a positive example. And I think there has been a number of positive examples in different countries where people power was manifested and it proved that citizens united can make a difference. I think there has to be some kind of a learning base, cases, websites of concrete examples where people power was overcoming some of the tyrannies, injustices, or oppression. I think the endowment should really try to work on the local level, because what we've seen in most of our countries is that the real change can happen more on the local level than on the national level. Big money, corruption, politics, it's very hard to overcome. But if you go on the local level where people are elected, where there's a little bit more transparency, accountability, there can be better, there's a better window of opportunity for change. I think endowments should also support grassroots groups and go beyond the usual suspects of a lot of organizations who are actually here at the table, who are receiving funding from Soros Foundation, who are receiving big money from European Union, who are co-funded by USAID. I think because it's a small fund relatively and because there are so many countries that it covers, it should go into supporting groups that are exactly working on these innovative ways, like you mentioned, in promoting democracy through cultural festivals, through schools, people who are trying to teach and to show, by example, the younger generation what it means to practice democracy and internalize some of these values, because this is really missing and there are not a lot of funding available for these kinds of work. And finally, I was thinking, because I now live in the UK and I see a lot of work in the civil society that is structured around campaigns. I think it would be excellent if organizations who come to European Endowment for Democracy, they come as a coalition around the campaign, and they would say, in our region or in our country, in our oblast, there is this issue, and this is the coalition of actors. It could be five individuals, one NGO, one university, a school, a newspaper. I don't know what kind of campaign it will be. But this campaign will have a very clear proposition for change and a very clear idea how to achieve it. And then it would be also, I think, measurable impact that we can say that this financing helped to make this change. So some of these ideas, and, you know, I really think that it's hard time now to work on democracy promotion in Europe, because we lost some kind of romanticism of the 20 years ago. There's no straightforward receipts. There's a little bit of disillusionment. But I think by having right people, good technology, and clear strategies, we will prevail.
Thank you. I just wanted to pick up one point, I think, in your paper where you said that a lot of the NGOs, their priorities to have policy impact, but when asked did they have any policy impact, the answer was often no. And I guess that's partly because you've been knocking against a brick wall and there's nobody listening. Do you think that the EED should be looking also at policy impact, or more, as you say, on the, you know, focusing on changing the culture internally?
Well, I think EED should look at the policy impact, but through people power, not through the power of knowledge, which I don't undermine. I think it's very important. But we have seen so far that the change that happened in the countries was coming through the push of the masses, so to say. A lot of campaigns that were won in educational reform, in stopping some of the destructive measures of the government and bringing change, has been done through a citizen power more than the power of argument.
What? Yeah. Okay, sure.
Alicia, thank you very much. That was very interesting. In Armenia, we saw this. we saw NGOs monitoring the elections, etc., etc. That was fine, the media monitoring. And then when the election result was announced, suddenly we saw young people coming from nowhere, as far as I can see, demonstrating against Odihr, demonstrating against the election monitors, demonstrating outside the embassies, the Odihr embassy, demonstrating outside the American embassy, demonstrating outside the Polish embassy, because they felt that what was happening with election observation was wrong. This was the beginning of an unstructured movement, which I think is what you're talking about, and it was completely outside
Well, I've been in Armenia 3 weeks ago, and also I've heard a lot about the environmental movements that was also unstructured. And in general, throughout the region, the polling shows that citizens prefer informal engagement than membership in organizations. In Georgia, we saw a big study on the social capital, which shows that citizens prefer just to come together with friends and go and protest and then maybe never set up any organization. But finding these pockets, it's so challenging. It's so easy because we can never really predict it unless we are insiders. And one of the challenges for EED would be exactly to have these wise men people on the ground who would be able to exactly show who is who, because it's not easy.
We'll open it up to questions from everybody, but finally go to Vera, because Edward hasn't reached us yet. Vera's paper, Great Expectations, which was finalised in January and is done together as a civil society forum initiative, is available outside if you didn't pick it up. But Vera has written many papers on EU external financial instruments over the years, so I think she has a lot of insights into some of the things to watch out for, lessons learned in terms of democracy assistance. Vera.
Thank you, Jeff. I will be very brief at this moment because I believe that there's a lot of input in this room. Mr. Pomianowski would like to hear, and also you, I believe, have many questions. So at this point, let me just make a couple of comments, general nature. The first one is that we have to keep in mind that the emergence of EED is really a true success of the democracy support community in the European Union and in the neighborhood. The EED is still not operational, but we keep hearing all kind of EED bashing, if you like, from many parts. And at this point, I would say not fully deserved, because we haven't seen the outputs, and nothing has been delivered so far. So from the short-term perspective, I see one challenge, and that is that there is enormous pressure to display an added value, and this is imposed on EED to really perform and to show that there is an added value. And to this question, there is this operational. There are the operational issues connected, and also thematic issues. And I believe that you just heard Mr. Pomianowski, and he described the state of the play. So you will have many questions regarding this. One of my concerns at this stage would be that we heard quite ambitious agenda, including the three no's and many other issues that should be covered. And with the secretariat of 12 people, it seems to me quite a huge workload. So perhaps this would be one of my concerns. Also, I agree with what Orisia said, that one of the key priorities should be to go to the ground and really to do the outreach work and support the alternative movements, alternative actors, and innovative approaches. So having the agenda of finding co-funding or new donors for projects that are actually rejected by the EED seems to me like really additional workload that might somehow, slow down the operational capacity of the endowment. But this probably is still, there is still some time to consider this and to perhaps reconsider. And my last 2 points would be tackling rather the long-term challenges that the EED might be facing. and one of them is the sustained political support. Because we have impressive budget at the moment, or EED has impressive budget at the moment. It has political backing. But the budget runs until 2015, and then we all know in which conditions the European Union is at the moment. So in my view, there should be also continuous work not only of the EED representatives, but also of the civil society to push for keeping the EED issue on the agenda and to secure the backing for the operations of the endowment. And the second long-term challenge is related to the funding, as I already mentioned, which is secured only until 2015. And in my view, there should be some debate about some alternative resources, how to secure at least the operational part of the endowment, so meaning the wages of the staff and etc. And perhaps also a debate should be generated about these alternative resources, like trying to find some specific funding formula that would be independent of the mood and political situation in the member states of the European Union and those who contribute to the EED budget. So I would leave it here, and yeah, I think we will open the floor for the questions. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Yep, let's take some questions. How much longer do you have?
Depends on questions.
If they're really exciting questions, we'll stay longer. Please.
I guess I have sort of a comment. If the EED is meant to be sort of supporting more unconventional projects, if it's looking to make the application process less cumbersome, I think there's also some other things that, from an NGO perspective, maybe would be non-traditional and could really help. I think that a lot of donors, the EU included, put a lot of emphasis on sort of the reporting requirements showing qualitative impact, or a quantitative impact, really, sometimes when it's artificial to do so. I know in Azerbaijan, often we do these projects, and if we're honest, over the course of the project, the issues we were examining got worse. It's hard to say, you know, okay, X number of laws were positively changed. You know, we find these ways of reporting it, but the truth is that the fact that it doesn't always get better in a project period doesn't mean it's not worth working on. Sometimes it's even more important to keep attention to those issues in the face of this adversity. And I think that sometimes the impact is hard to measure, because sometimes just keeping that issue on the agenda could have a preventative impact that nobody could really say to what extent was the case. Also, I find that a lot of donors are unwilling to contribute to the core funding of NGOs, really wanting to be focused on funding specific activities, which I can understand, but at the same time, that's resulted, I think, in a lot of NGOs having very little resources outside of specific project activities, when actually they need an office, they need, you know, communication expenses, they need salaries to even do the work in the first place. And so I think it's worth looking at, you know, organizations that are addressing really critical issues and maybe just supporting their general work in addition to specific activities. Thank you.
Could you just identify yourself, and could I ask everybody, because the panelists won't know who everybody is.
Sure, I'm Rebecca Vincent. I work freelance with a number of Azerbaijani NGOs.
There and then there.
Thank you very much. My name is Leila Aliyeva from Baku, Azerbaijan. I would suggest a holistic approach to civil society support, in a sense that if you look at the history 100 years ago, Azerbaijan had much more vibrant civil society than now. How ironic it may sound, because there was a market economy, what we call in nowadays market economy. We had a lot of independent producers, so there were a lot of unions of professionals, you know, trade unions and other groups of people. Now we have very limited market elements, and that means our civil society is either very much dependent on the local political patronage, the local money, or on the foreign money that explains the current campaign against those who are supported by the foreign money. And when I say holistic approach, I mean that there should be definitely coordinated efforts and strategy, both from the side of the other EU structures which promote market economy and reform in the economy, and with the support for civil society. That's basically the other thing is that in order not to get into the situation which National Endowment for Democracy got or National Democratic Institute, probably there should be a very thorough calculation how can European Endowment for Democracy secure its operations in the countries like Azerbaijan and or Belarus, and whether they, you know, will be able continue to operate on the conditions which are we now observing in Russia or in Azerbaijan already is now going on the same thing. So, thank you.
Спасибо. Артур Сакунц, Ваназурский офис Хельсинской гражданской ассамблеи Армении. Я, честно говоря, мне было очень интересно вот все подходы, которые касаются поддержки гражданского общества в наших странах, особенно в Армении, и те проблемы, которые связаны с политикой фондов, потому что действительно очень важные проблемы. Это касается в первую очередь политика фондов в том плане, что насколько они учитывают реальную политическую ситуацию. Вот вы говорите о нетрадиционных проектах. У нас традиционный авторитаризм, в котором любой проект, она нетрадиционна в этом ситуациях. То есть нетрадиционность сама подходов, она определяется политической ситуацией. Правильно? Было замечено, после выборов, первый раз, между прочим, ОДИР не давал после парламентских выборов тоже оценки с точки зрения свободные или справедливые выборы. Просто представил проблемы, формировал проблемы. Раньше из-за этих оценок мы очень много проблем имели с нашими властями, потому что они сказали, вот видите, ОДИР характеризовал, что они свободнее. Да, есть проблемы, но все равно свободные и справедливые. А мы говорим, нет. И мы измеряем нашими показателями, которые взяты из того же ОДИРа. Просто они что-то не замечают, а мы замечаем. Первый раз что-то они с нами начали работать в Армении. Прислушивались с мнением гражданского общества. И с этой точки зрения, первое, чтобы вы узнали. Те организации, во всяком случае, из Армении, которых вы первый раз избирали на гражданский форум, они, их эффективность деятельности определилась с долгосрочностью поддержки их деятельности. Был такой World Learning, который пришел, короткое время, 4 года, работал в Армении, как грибы после дождя появились НГО, потом убрались и сразу после, как дождь прекратился, очень много НГО тоже прекратились. Потому что они под грантами действительно создавались и институционально не способствовали их развитию. А те организации, которые могли действительно построить свою стратегию и получить долгосрочную поддержку, они состоялись. Сейчас против нас создают другие организации, ГОНГО, которые получают финансирование от бюджета. Притом без отчетного расходования бюджета, из государственного бюджета. Буквально несколько дней назад, неделю назад, мы узнали, что 500 миллионов драмов, это очень большая сумма, из бюджета за 3 года получали какие-то организации, и нам называют грантоедами. Да? То есть, я хочу сказать, власть не стоит на месте. То есть, вы работаете как полу-НГО и полуправительственные, вот. С одной рукой работаете с правительством, а с другой с НГО. Значит, с правительством, когда вы работаете, учитываете, какова вот характер этого правительства. А он действительно работает против реального сектора гражданского общества. Даже USAID очень долго поддержал In Your Choice. который наблюдал за выборами, сказал, что это очень нормальные выборы. То есть получалось, что они реально долгие годы поддерживали Конго. Кто Конго, кто НГО? Честно говоря, у меня я не могу вам определенные критерии представить, но однозначно, что если у организации нету подход, то есть подход его, оценка, его позиция, она совпадает с оценками правительства, естественно, это Конго. Может быть, кратковременные Конго, может быть, долгосрочные Конго, да? Но насколько вы будете учитывать, насколько вы будете учитывать вот этот реальную картину NGO-сектора, это очень важно. И вот у вас есть какие-то критерии?
Thank you very much. My name is Mirela, and I would like to start by congratulating the founding members of the EED, and in particular the Polish government for such a wonderful initiative. I come myself from a new member state, Romania, and I'm happy and proud to see that such initiative comes from a new member state of the European Union, and I think this is not by accident, because we in the new member states have quite some experience in this sense. I was cheered to hear about your innovative approach in promoting or supporting democracy, and I hope that this means that your support will go not only to technical systems of democratic governance, like elections and government structures and so on, but it also go towards bottom-up approaches of promoting citizen participation on what citizens are interested in participating in. And for instance, if this means that citizens want to see more services from their governments, I hope that the EED will support in this sense. And I would like to bring an example from my field of activity. I'm Secretary General of a coalition of 600 child-focused NGOs from the wider Black Sea area. We also have four members from the Eastern Partnership countries. And we, our organizations promote child protection reforms in our countries. And some of our members have been supported by USAID. And when USAID stopped its support a few years ago for some of our countries, it produced a report called The Job That Remains. And one of the conclusions, very surprising conclusions of that report, was that childfare reform programs were the most successful democracy building programs that USAID has ever put into field in any part of the world. And they said that this was because these programs developed democracy building skills in citizens as they worked with populations to develop needed services. So the citizens sometimes are seeing that we have in our countries a class of citizens which are distated with democracy processes, and they are aloof. They don't want to participate. But when they see a concrete problem, something that they can participate in, they feel attracted and they want to engage. And then the same skills that they used to solve a concrete issue, they can use to solve something bigger, which is more concretely linked to democracy and to technical aspects of democracy. So I would really hope that you will take an innovative approach in every sense.
Thank you. I think we have a couple of more questions just over here.
Thanks a lot. My name is Tina Tintzerzote and I'm from Freedom. I have a question to Mr. Bobianowski. To what degree do you consider cooperation with the governments of the Eastern Partnership, or Eastern countries or the Southern countries? And I'm asking this because I can imagine the end goal of the EED is supporting unsupported and empowering citizens is important, but so much important is a certain degree of the political will of the governments to it should be a two-way process. So do you consider certain kind of dialogue or cooperation with the governments? Have you discussed this? And the second question, if you are planning to support the labor unions, trade unions, and professional organizations? Thank you.
Jan, you had a question? And then we'll come back to all the panelists.
I would like to follow up on what Orisha already said. I think it's quite clear that the changes, the real changes, are brought not by the NGO organizations individually, but by the popular movements. Like it happened in Poland at the time of the Solidarity, and we must say frankly that it wasn't a labor union, it was just a popular anti-communist movement. The same happened in Ukraine. It was a movement of the people who just were tired of what was happening in the country. The same was with Rose Revolution in Georgia, with Twitter Revolution in Moldova. It was the same with Arab Spring. So I think that we should also find a flexible way to support this kind, to be ready to support this kind of revolutionary changes. And it looks that such a change is almost coming in Russia. And Russian authorities were very clever in putting up the legislation which is just cutting off the donors from the local markets, what is difficult for the local organizations to survive and to continue the activities. So I think that it would be really nice, because usually the European procedures, donor procedures, are considered to be a kind of very bureaucratic, and we truly believe that European endowment will not be of this kind, and this flexibility is really highly recommended. Thank you.
Okay, well, why don't we take some feedback from the panelists? You have a quick question, Chris?
Yes, just a quick comment to say that mass movements do bring change, but mass movements run out of steam after a time, and then the authorities come back with a vengeance. And we see this in all the countries that Jan has mentioned, including Solidarity in Poland with martial law. So mass movements are fun, but they don't last.
Actually, also from Jan's point, I mean, the EED, as I understand it, is not covering Russia, and that might be a political question. No, whether that's set in stone and for how long. But I'll let Jerzy Pomirovsky respond himself.
Thank you very much. May I start with the last question? Well, of course, at this moment Russia is not covered, but nothing prevents the Board of Governors and the Member States to add, let them think, let them have the courage, and let them task me with this task. I will be more than happy to follow my collective boss orders in this regard. So I would do some in reverse order, because they are also easy and the short questions, especially coming from Frida, about the trade unions and different type of movements. We are totally inclusive in this respect. I mean, all kind of social activism that can be supported within the described operational model of the EED, let's say the group of people wants to set up a trade union and they need the seed money to start. That's perfectly eligible for possible funding from EED. Of course, in a given context, because I mean, if this is in Libya, probably it is very attractive. If this is another trade union in Ukraine, I would hesitate to support maybe. But it's still, as it relates to the context. What about governments? Do we dialogue with governments? We are NGO, so we are not eligible to dialogue with governments. If governments want to dialogue with us, we will dialogue with them. And I was asked often the question, what if the government is unhappy about activities of endowment? Well, that means we are very much needed. And if government is happy, And we are happy too, and we are welcome. So in both cases, the government is not, it's not a target, it's not a point of reference for the endowment. It's just an important factor of overall picture. And that brings us to our Armenian colleague about the Politica National Fonda. Well, you're absolutely right. Who is Gongo and who is NGO? It's not that easy to say. Maybe the simple definition is who is against is NGO and who is for is Gongo. But when they change through the democratic process, do they change also the positions? So it's a very tricky exercise. I think what I really believe in that the NGO and the real civil activisms are those who are talking about values, campaigning for something, for change, trying to achieve. And for them, who is in power is a secondary. Because, of course, this is the key issue. If we fight for democracy, then we do not have a clear vision who next is going to be in power. We are fighting to remove the regime that we see as autocratic or autoritarian. If we fight for the values in the society that is already able to make its democratic choice, then we are fighting for values, we are fighting against corruption, we are fighting for better quality of democracy, and that's a different stage. So we have to make this distinction between different approaches. So definitely, as long as elections are not fair, and just that is still a fight for democracy. It's not a fight to consolidate or to make a better democracy in your country. So here is the possible distinction, but honestly, I share your doubt. I mean, it's not that easy to make this clear division. Regarding reporting requirements, definitely we want to stick to the main concepts of the endowment, that endowment is less bureaucratic, so also reporting requirements are going to be of less burden to our beneficiaries. But at the same time, we want to bring back a more of so-called forgotten methodologies, so asking people what they think about results of, so like a cross-checking mechanisms, asking wise men, people whom we trust in a specific location, what they think about this or that activity. So these are going to be a more of the monitoring tool that we are going to use instead of asking for detailed reporting by the beneficiary itself. The core institutional funding is one that we envisage, so definitely when there is a request to support an administrative capacity of an organization that in parallel runs a project, specialized projects, that is an eligible request, and I mentioned this. This is either it's between projects or it is just to strengthen the institutional capacity of the organization, or seed money, it means to build a capacity. This all we envisage, and these are all response to already requests that were coming to us in the process of discussing EED. Where are the niches? Where are the gaps? So this philosophy of the filling gaps in existing mechanisms of financing was a very guiding philosophy. About Azeri society and holistic approach, I very much share your vision. In my capacity still within the Polish Foreign Ministry, we were often discussing, for example, how to convince a Ukrainian society for the European choice, how to make a society to be really convinced that the Europe and the European values are a good choice for the Ukraine. And the answer sometimes came very simple. open the borders, let every Ukrainian to cross to Poland, then to go to Czech, to Slovak, to Hungary, I'm not referring to Germany or France, and to see what happens in those countries within last 20 years. The life is better. 20 years ago, when we crossed border from Poland to Ukraine, in Ukraine, situation looks better than in Poland. Now, situation in Poland looks better. So that's a holistic approach. Just making people, not telling them Europe is nice, just asking them, come and see by yourself. So if market economy instead of resource-driven economy can be applied to Azerbaijan, it would be nice, but the economy of Azerbaijan is resource-driven, so it's centralized. And that is a certain limitation that will last for some time. So I would listen to you when we meet in private, what can be done within this framework, because this cannot be changed by another project of European Union, whether it comes from democracy support money or whether it comes from infrastructure or economic cooperation money. It's not that obvious and not that easy. Thanks for congratulations from Romania, Milena. We are very blessed with the Romanian representative in the executive committee, very active, and I also share your concept of looking into projects that are having strong component of democracy building and democracy support, although in their names we cannot see this specific title of democracy support. And here is exactly the part of the work that I think, and I was referring to when I was saying like co-funding. If there are projects, there are specialized projects in different areas, whether empowerment of women or child protection or many others, including water and sanitary infrastructure in small village. Whenever in these projects they could be a democracy support component, and we can join such a project with the big donor that supports specialized projects, we will do this. And we will focus also to elaborate this democracy support element, and that would be the excellent synergy that can be between the big donor and the small donor as endowment is done. So about the Russia we already mentioned. I think I have addressed all basic questions, so hopefully.
You have to leave, or?
I have to.
Okay. So, thanks very much. And